So I have a confession to make. I like to be prepared. This should not be a surprise to anyone who knows me. I like ducks in a row. I like things in order. I write on graph paper, if that tells you anything about me. I think that says a lot. And so this whole week, I've been sitting on a passage of scripture with every intention of preaching on it tonight. Revelation from the Lord, just this is where we're going. And then last night at 10:15 p.m., the Lord just went whoop, and knocked all of my notes and all of my figurative ducks just off my mental desk and went, we're doing something new. So, I'm going someplace completely different, a complete detour. And so, because of that, because none of the scriptures are the same, I walked in with a lined piece of paper with a bunch of different passages on it. And so I would encourage you to not rely on your screens tonight. Get an actual Bible or another device, because they might be there, they might not. And it's no one's fault. Take it up with the Lord, okay? So tonight this sermon title is 8 Prophetic Principles to Guide You Through Transition. 8 Prophetic Principles to Guide You Through Transition. And I say principles because these are tenets that I think hold true no matter what transition you find yourself in, because all of us go through transitionary seasons. But I say prophetic because I believe this is the Lord's word for us now, in this season that we are in. What's interesting is that I don't number things until I get it all. You know, I get it all, it's all bulleted pointed, and I go, oh, okay, there's 6. And so if I'm going to put that in the sermon title, now I know what I have. The Lord went whoosh, to my mental desk, and he said, we're doing something new. And then he went, 8 prophetic principles. And I went, I had a blank sheet of paper. And I was like, but I don't got 8, Lord. He's like, you will. So, and he was faithful. So I have 8 principles. We're going to Exodus. So you can start flipping there. We're going to start right out in chapter 1. Transition is a scary place to be, because it's not where you were, and you're not where you're going. My family does road trips because my kids are amazing in the car. But there's a moment when you get on the road where it's like, hope we have everything we need, because I just got on 90. We're not going back now. And now you're out there. And there's this time frame that you're in limbo. Transitions are scary for us physically. If you've ever moved, it's a weird place to be. Everything's in boxes. You're just kind of shaky. Transitions are weird in the natural when we do jobs. There's that moment where you don't know what's expected of you, where you're leaving the other thing, but you're not quite settled in the new thing. Transitions are especially scary spiritually, because a lot of times when we're in transition, we think we've messed up. Because the things that were comfortable before are suddenly gone. They're suddenly stripped away. And we're not someplace new yet. And we're on this shaky path. And a lot of times we think we messed up, that that's the reason why we're not in our old spot. But God promises to bring us from glory to glory to glory. And from one glory And the next glory, there's that tricky word too. Glory to glory. To glory. So tonight we're talking about that little word, too. The path from one thing to the next. The month we're in, the Hebrew month we're in, is a fun month because it's a month all about transition. We're going to be in Exodus, and so you have the Passover, and then you have after the Passover, when they leave, the transition that the Israelites were on. They leave in this month. They're walking in this month. The Lord is revealing himself in this month. And yes, we know it goes on for 40 years, but it starts here. So Exodus 1, starting right at the beginning in verse 1. Now these are the names of the children of Israel who came to Egypt. Each man and his household came with Jacob. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, and Benjamin. Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. All those who were descendants of Jacob were 70 persons, for Joseph was in Egypt already. And Joseph died, all his brothers and all that generation. But the children of Israel were fruitful and increased abundantly, multiplied and grew exceedingly mighty, and the land was filled with them. Verse 8, now there arose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph. And he said to his people, look, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply and it happen in the events of war, that they also join our enemies and fight against us and so go up out of the land. Therefore, they set taskmasters over them to afflict them with their burdens. And they built for Pharaoh supply cities, Pithom and Ramses. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew. And they were in dread of the children of Israel. So the Egyptians made the children of Israel serve with rigor, and they made their lives bitter with hard bondage, in mortar, in brick, and in all manner of service in the field. All their service in which they made them serve was with rigor. So here's the context for how Israelites became slaves. Because in the previous book of the Bible, Genesis, Joseph is second in command. He has provided for the whole nation and for his family, and they have moved to join him. He is honored. There is great wealth. So we have to see, how do we get from there to slaves? And this is what happened. There's a new king. He doesn't know Joseph. He doesn't care about Joseph. All he sees is this group of people who are not Egyptians, and they are getting larger and larger and larger, and he sees it as a threat. And so he subdues them. Okay? He subdues them. So now Exodus 2, verse 23. Okay, we're setting our context. Now it happened in the process of time that the king of Egypt died. Then the children of Israel groaned because of the bondage, and they cried out, and their cry came up to God because of the bondage. So God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. And God looked upon the children of Israel, and God acknowledged them. Right there is when their transition begins. Right there. The Israelites don't know it yet. But right there is when everything's shifting. Because God looks at them, he sees them, he goes, they are not where I want them to be. I want them someplace different, and I will make it happen. Ephesians 3:7. And the Lord said, I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt, and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrows. So I've come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up from that land to a good and large land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, and the Hittites, and the Amorites, and the Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites. Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come to me, and I have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppress them. Come now, therefore, and I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. So the Lord speaks to Moses. He calls him to the side. He calls him to turn away. He's in the burning bush. And he says, I have seen them, and so I am going to deliver them. And he makes a promise that he will bring them to a good and large land, to a land flowing with milk and honey. Okay? He promises good for them. Okay? So Moses goes. There's a lot of waffling before Moses goes, but eventually he goes. He goes to Pharaoh. He tells him that the Israelites, to let the Israelites go. Right? We know this story. Tells him to let the Israelites go. And Pharaoh is not thrilled because he believes that he owns the Israelites. He gets to choose. And so he goes, well, if they're trying to go worship, then they must not have enough work to do. And that brings us to chapter 5, where he says, so the same day, Pharaoh commanded the taskmasters of the people and their officers, saying, you shall no longer give the people straw to make brick as before. Let them go and gather straw for themselves, and you shall lay on them the quota of bricks which they made before. You shall not reduce it, for they are idle. Therefore they cry out, saying, let us go and sacrifice to our God. Let more work be laid on the men that they may labor in it, and let them not regard false words. So Pharaoh makes the order for the Israelites to make bricks without straw being provided. Their burden gets heavier. And here we come to principle number one. Staying the same is not an option. Staying the same is not an option. The Israelites were angry. They come to Moses and they start complaining because their burden has been increased. But there was never going to be an opportunity for them to go back to normal. Either they were going to go into increased bondage, okay? Pharaoh's making their burden heavier and heavier and heavier, or they were going to go into freedom. And so our transition season leads to the same choice for us. Staying the same isn't one of the options we get. We can respond to our transition season in a way that leads to increased bondage in our lives, increased fear, increased burdens, increased submission to habits that are not profitable for us, increased enslavement to sin. Or we can respond to our transition season in a way that leads us to freedom. But once you hit that point of transition, staying the same isn't what we get anymore. Sometimes we long for that. And it's okay to look at some of the good things in the past and go, oh, I miss that. But you can't stay there because it's not a choice you get. Hope deferred makes the heart sick. If your gaze stays back in that past place of, oh, I want that. I want to be normal again. I want that place. Then what you're really doing is submitting to greater bondage. Once you hit a season of transition, things will not stay the same. We see that in the world right now. We're all in a place of transition right now. And so many people long for things to go back to normal. But it's not a choice we get. Things will change. They will change. And we have the choice to determine with the Lord how our hearts change in the midst of it. These points of transition are going to keep happening to us corporately because the Lord is leading us to a place where he will return. He is leading us to a place where who his people are is abundantly clear. Where the church, the global church, is united in saying, come, Lord Jesus. And we don't get there without going from glory to glory to glory, which means a whole lot of change ahead of us. So for ourselves personally and for ourselves corporately, it's important that we figure out how to do this well. So principle number one, staying the same is not an option. And the Lord wants us to go into increased freedom. He does not want us to be in bondage. Matthew 11:30. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Right there. The burdens aren't supposed to get heavier, right? He's calling us into rest. He's calling us into freedom. Okay. Principle number two. Our destination is glorious and beautiful, but the way there is rough. Our destination is glorious and beautiful, but the way there is rough. We read where the Lord told Moses what his intention for Israel was, that he was going to bring them into a good and a large land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the promised land. He promised them a glorious end, a hope and a future. But getting there was going to be hard. And I don't mean this in some kind of subjective, rough kind of way where you're like, oh man, that was so hard. But now that I look back, it was so easy. No, I actually mean rough. At the end, it feels light to us because of what we obtained. But objectively speaking, it's a hard road to trod. So we have Exodus, still in Exodus. Exodus chapter 5, verses 22. Okay? The Israelites are complaining because they have a harder burden. And so Moses brings this complaint to the Lord. He says, so Moses returned to the Lord and said, Lord, why have you brought trouble on this people? Why is it you have sent me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to this people. Neither have you delivered your people at all. Israelites complained to Moses. Moses complains to the Lord. He's like, you said you were going to deliver us. But since you said that, there's been not a whole lot of delivering, and there's been a whole lot of just burdening. And so the Lord responds to him. The Lord responds to him in Exodus 6, verse 6. And he says, therefore, say to the children, say to the children of Israel, I am the Lord. I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. I will rescue you from their bondage, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. I will take you as my people, and I will be your God. Then you shall know that I am the Lord your God, who brings you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. And I will bring you into the land which I swore to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And I will give it to you as a heritage. I am the Lord. So Moses spoke thus to the children of Israel, but they did not heed Moses because of anguish of spirit and cruel bondage. So in the face of their complaints, the Lord doubles down. He promises them glorious things. I will bring you out. I will rescue you. I will redeem you. I will take you as my people. I will be your God. I will bring you into the land, that good and large land, that milk and honey land. And I will give it to you as a heritage. And then what happens? Moses, on the strength of these promise from the Lord, this glorious thing that the Lord is inviting them into, goes back to Pharaoh. And then for the next six chapters, it's plagues. The Israelites don't go anywhere. They're still in Egypt. And Moses, by the direction of the Lord, water turns to blood. There's frogs. There's lice, there's flies, there's diseased livestock, there's boils, there is hail, there is locusts, there is darkness, and finally the firstborn die. Now we see when we're reading through those, I'm not going to read through all of them, but we see as we read through those that there's several of those where the Lord makes it abundantly plain that his people were not touched by them. It starts in the fourth plague with the flies. You will see that my people are separate. There will be no flies in their land. The flies will not touch them, okay? He says that their livestock won't die. He says no hail will land in Goshen. He says there will be no darkness in Goshen. There will be light there, right? But let's just be real clear. They're still in Egypt. So even if the plagues don't touch them, it is still a really difficult place to be. Okay, you don't have flies, but everything around you has flies. Okay? You don't have hail, but everything around you has hail. Okay? you have light, but everything around you is darkness. It is a hard place to be when you are blessed, when you are shielded, when you are protected, when you have favor, and what surrounds you does not have that same shelter, does not have that same protection. One, because it's just hard to exist in that kind of atmosphere. Even though you are grateful for the Lord's blessing, you see everything around you crumbling, systems crumbling. And two, when you exist under the shield of the Lord, the negative attention on you increases. So the Lord's positive attention on you increases. Awesome. That's where we want to be. But then the world's negative attention on you also increases. So just because they are shielded does not mean that they're not feeling the effects. The way was rough. We see this practically. I'm a mom, okay? And so people talk about pregnancy and labor. Like, baby at the end, yay, baby, awesome, baby. You still have to go through a lot to get to baby. Even before labor, there's a lot to go through before you get to baby. During labor, there's a lot. Even if you were blessed to have an easy labor, or what we call an easy labor, there's still a lot that happens. It is objectively hard to get to the point of having a baby, okay? My oldest daughter, some of you will be familiar with this, was diagnosed with infantile scoliosis when she was 14 months old. And so what that means is that we went to an orthopedist for some concerns that we had. They took an x-ray, and it turned out that her spine was curved at 55 degrees. So if you think straight, you think 45, she was past that. Okay, her spine was also torqued, so that part of her rib cage was actually over to her back. And so what we discovered was that degree of curve was totally unsustainable. Within 10 degrees is considered normal. Within 30 degrees, your body can probably correct on its own, or at least it will stay stable. Past 30 degrees, it will get worse and worse and worse. So we had 55 degrees. And so at 14 months, what they told us the treatment option was to put her in casts from her shoulders to her hips. And so what we did was she would get put unconscious, put on a table, that they would straighten her. Then they would cast her so that her body would stay straight, so that as she grew, it would straighten. We went through 14 of those casts. So from about the time she was 16 months old till she was 4 and a half, she was basically constantly in a cast. She was in an unsustainable position. We were going for health, but we had to get from here to here because this was a path that the Lord asked us to walk through. We could not stay where we were. Staying the same was not an option. It would keep getting worse. There'd be no room for her lungs, no room for her organs. She would die. We wanted straight. We walked a path that was 14 casts. It was hard. We were going to a glorious future, one that we've obtained by the grace of God. But the way to get there was hard. Sometimes as Christians, we don't want to hear that. But what about anything that Jesus said made us think that things would be easy? Right? what made us think that things would be easy? 2 Corinthians 4:17, I alluded to it. Lord, you're good. 4:17, for our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. It's affliction. Though he says light affliction, nothing about the word affliction makes me think it's like roses and bunnies. Affliction. Your word does, your mouth does that like thing when you say it. It doesn't even feel like a nice word, right? It feels like a whip. Affliction. But we say that in comparison to this place that we're going with the Lord, it is light. But it's in comparison. Right? We still have to walk that path. And then John 16:33. This one's going to be in the Amplified. Amplified. Flipping to that spot. I have told you these things so that in me you may have perfect peace. In the world, the right now, you have tribulation and distress and suffering. But be courageous, be confident, be undaunted, be filled with joy. I have overcome the world. My conquest is accomplished, my victory abiding. It's like, we know we win. Yay, God. You have tribulation and distress and suffering, right? So that's what we have to walk to get to the yay God moment, okay? So that's principle number two. Our destination is glorious and beautiful, but the way there is rough. And if you don't have that settled, that the path is hard, then that's when you end up falling away from the Lord because you're discouraged, you're disappointed by the path that he asked you to walk. Principle number three. God requires you to participate, and he requires you to participate on his terms. God requires you to participate in your transition. And he requires you to participate on his terms. So Exodus 12, if you remember, we were just talking about the plagues, right? Plagues, 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 lots of junk. And then it ends with him saying that all the firstborn are going to die. And all the plagues before that the Lord shielded Israel from, he just did it, right? He gave them light instead of darkness. He shielded them from flies, kept their livestock healthy. But this plague, he says, I will save you, but you're going to have to do something. Exodus 12:21. Then Moses called for all the elders of Israel and said to them, go and take a lamb for yourselves. I don't want to be an Amplified anymore. Hold on one moment. New King James. Then Moses called for all the elders of Israel and said to them, pick out and take lambs for yourselves according to your families and kill the Passover lamb. You shall take a bunch of hyssop, dip it in the blood that is in the basin and strike the lintel and the two doorposts with the blood that is in the basin, and none of you shall go out the door of his house until morning. For the Lord will pass through to strike the Egyptians, and when he sees the blood on the lintel and on the two doorposts, the Lord will pass over the door and not allow the destroyer to come into your houses to strike you. I'm actually going to stop there. The other plagues that the Lord shielded him from, he just did. This one, he's like, get you a lamb, kill it, get the bush, dip it, make the cross, do the blood, right? At that time, if I was an Israelite, like, doesn't he know who we are? Like, he knows I'm his person. Why can't he just tell the destroyer not to come up in here? Why do I have to do this? I didn't have to do this any other time. How is some branches and some blood and hitting my doorpost with it, how does that do anything? But it's what the Lord asked them to do. God created us to partner with him. He created us to exist in partnership with him. We can't do God's part. Let the church say amen. But he refuses to do our part. We can't do his, but he refuses to do ours. He says, we're in this together. Genesis, right at the beginning, God creates everything. And then he tells Adam, go ahead and name these animals. Like, was God incapable of naming the animals? No. Like, it's ridiculous to think. But he said, Adam was going to work alongside of him. Adam couldn't create anything. He wasn't calling the stuff up out the dust. I mean, beyond the fact that he wasn't even made when God was doing that part yet. But let's say if he was made, if God's calling everything forth, we have a Jesus storybook Bible, and it's like, animals, spring forth. You know, light, come out. It's just this very declarative, like, go, this, yes, that, right? Adam's not doing any of that. But God goes, hey, I've got a job for you. You name these things. I'm not going to name them. You do it. Right from the beginning, God says we are partners with him. He's going to work, but we're going to work too. We don't always understand what our work part did. Like, think about Jericho. He's like, I'll make the walls come down. Y'all going to do some walking, though, first. What did that have to do with anything? The Lord makes a part for us to play, okay? So God requires you to participate in your transition, and he requires you to participate on his terms. When you are in a season of transition, there are things that you will have to do. We do not get to sit back and just be whisked away into paradise. There is a part for us to play. We would like for it just to be glory, glory, not glory to glory, right? We just want to go A, B. No line in the middle that we have to traverse, okay? But that's not what the Lord has called us to. So they participate in the Passover. They do their thing. They follow all the commandments that the Lord gives them to do during that time, all of his orders. And now we're in Exodus 13. I'm going to skip all the way down to verse 17. Then it came to pass when Pharaoh had let the people go, that God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, lest perhaps the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by way of the wilderness of the Red Sea, and the children of Israel went up in orderly ranks out of the land of Egypt. Finally, they are out. The Lord leads them. And we see in verse 21 that the Lord is really leading them. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so as to go by day and night. He did not take away the pillar of cloud by day or the pillar of fire by night from before the people. And that brings us to principle number 4. The way God leads us and reveals himself to us during transition is unlike any other time. The way God leads us and reveals himself to us during transition is unlike any other time. He's a pillar. He's clouds. He's fire. Right? He's never led his people like that before. And he doesn't again. God leads them in a very specific way during this specific season of transition. He reveals himself in a very specific way during this season of transition, and he does the same for us. Sometimes that scares us because it feels like we're not hearing God, because maybe you're used to hearing him in a specific way, and all of a sudden that way seems to have dried up. But God's opened up a new door for you, right? Do not despise how he reveals himself in that way, but know that the Lord is close to you in a season of transition. He's close to you in a different way than he is at any other time. But a word of warning, though. Sometimes we think that God's presence being close to us is all that is necessary so that we don't ever have to deal with the junk inside of us anymore. Okay? But God's presence does not absolve us of our responsibility to engage our hearts. His presence does not absolve us of our responsibility to engage our hearts. We see right there, Exodus 14. Go to the next chapter, verse 10. God's there. He's fire. He's clouds. And when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes. So Pharaoh's coming after them now. But God is there. He's a pillar. Okay? The children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. So they were very afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. Then they said to Moses, because there are no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness. God is right there, and the Israelites' fear still causes them to sin. He's right there, okay? He's right there the whole time through their journey in the wilderness, and the Israelites are complaining. They're murmuring. They're backbiting, right? They're talking trash like every chance they can get. And it keeps them from even being able to walk into the promised land at the appointed time because they're just succumbing to fear left and right. And God's right there. How big do you think the clouds and the fire need to be for the entire 12 tribes of Israel to see them and for it to be a pillar? It's not like we light our candles with those little, like, the long things, the long lighters, right? Because I'm not good at the little ones. So the long ones, right? Moses isn't out in front with like a big lighter, like, God is with us, right? There is a pillar of cloud, a pillar of fire that everyone can see. It is undeniable that God is with them, and yet they are still falling into fear that causes them to sin. God's presence doesn't mean that you don't still have to work your heart. Guard your heart. Keep scraping out the junk in your heart, renewing your mind, dealing with the lies that you believe, okay? His presence doesn't mean that you don't have to do that stuff, okay? You still have to engage your heart, even though God is very near to you. So the Israelites are complaining. Exodus 14, 15. And the Lord said to Moses, why do you cry to me? Tell the children of Israel to go forward. And that brings us to principle number 5. Keep moving forward. Anchor yourself in the reality that is coming. God's like, why are you even looking back there? I called you to deliverance. I called you to a promised land. Keep going into that. And he says the same thing to us now. Keep moving forward. Anchor your heart in hope. Not in the unsteady ground that you are in now, in the reality that is, but in the glorious and beautiful future that is coming. Going back to that example of my daughter with the scoliosis, it was hard. Okay? It was hard. She was developmentally delayed physically, and so she didn't know how to walk yet when she got into the cast because she was so weak. And I remember sitting with her pediatrician and us just talking it through and going, but she's so little, like, and plaster's so heavy. Like, how will she learn to walk? Will she be able to crawl? Will she even be able to, like, sit? Like, how will she do this? And he was like, you're concerned about walking and like crawling, but if we don't do this, she'll die. We want life. We want life for her. And so I had to hold on to that. It was hard. We'd get a cast cut off at 4 p.m., and we'd be back at Strong in the pediatric OR suite. I'd have to be there at like 5:30 the next morning. We'd have less than 12 hours with a kid who could like wiggle and move, where we could feel her body, where we could give her a hug without having plaster cut into us, where she could get a bath for her whole body, not just sponging off arms and legs and stuff. And we did it because we were looking towards that beautiful and glorious end, that straight spine. If I had just thought about what felt like torture that we were putting her through, we would have faltered. We had to anchor our hearts in the reality that was coming. We had to anchor our hearts in that glorious and beautiful end. And that is what the Lord calls us to do during transition, to anchor our hearts in the future reality that is coming. And so we know the story. God puts himself between the Israelites and the Egyptians. He tells Moses to do something. Once again, he tells Moses, stretch out your hands. Like, did God really need Moses to stretch out his hands? Yes, because he told him to do it. But was he limited by that? No, he chose to constrain himself, right? So Moses stretches out his rod. The winds blow all night. The water, if you ever see Prince of Egypt, it's like, whoo, you know, like there's like the whale going through. It's really cool. And they cross, and God supernaturally delivers them from the Egyptians. And so they get to the other side, and they rejoice, right? I mean, it's a valid time if you're gonna say thank you right after your enemies have been defeated, right? Exodus 15, verses 1 and 2. Then Moses and the children of Israel sang this song to the Lord and spoke, saying, I will sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and its rider he has thrown into the sea. And then I'm going to roll down to the end of the chapter, verse 20 and 21. Then Miriam, the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took the timbrel in her hands, and all the women went out after her with timbrels and with dances. And Miriam answered them, sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and its rider he has thrown into the sea. And that brings us to principle number 6. Make your tongue an instrument of righteousness. I get that phrasing from Romans chapter 6, where it says in verse 13, and do not present your members as instruments of unrighteousness to sin, but present yourselves to God as being alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness to God. Make your tongue an instrument of righteousness. There's a passage in James, I'm not going to read it, but James 3, where he talks about the tongue. And how can such a small thing start a fire, right? With the same tongue, we both bless the Lord and curse people. And talking about how there's nothing else like it. Can the same spring give fresh water and salt water, right? And so he's going, so we have to make a conscious decision. Our tongue can be used for good and for evil. And so we have to make a conscious decision to Romans 6 it. Present it as an instrument of righteousness. Make the choice. Ron and I will hold Bible studies in our home. And 1 year ago, we went through the book of James, and we would ask people to paraphrase a passage each week. So we had a whole thing, and they would paraphrase. And this is at least a decade ago. And this still grosses me out. We got to that passage in James 3, and someone paraphrased it as, does a water fountain give you both fresh water and backwash? And I'm like, I could, right? And I was like, oh, I don't want to be like that. Backwash? Oh, no. I mean, I have 4 kids. They've all been little, trying to drink out of my water bottle. I know what backwash looks like. I don't want to be that before the Lord. Make your tongue an instrument of righteousness. Speak forth blessing. Speak forth thanksgiving. Speak forth praise. Keep your tongue from evil, your lips from deceit. Keep from spreading falsehoods or speaking against those in authority with words of cursing. Keep from complaining, from murmuring, from grumbling. And if you find yourself in that place, repent. and consecrate your tongue. And consecrate your tongue. Two more, stay with me. Principle number 7 is memorialize the milestones, even if you don't know why or understand the importance. Memorialize the milestones. I'm just going to sum these up. In Exodus 15, they go to Marah, right? The Lord has delivered them. He leads them to the kind of first stop on their journey, right? And they go to drink. They're super excited because they felt they were gonna die because they had no water. They go to drink, and the water is bitter. It's like poison to them, okay? And so they complain to the Lord, right? But the Lord tells Moses, put a branch in the water, and it turns to sweet. It turns to something that is life-giving to them. And he says that, I am the Lord who heals you, right? He reveals himself, and he gives them a name to remember him by. And then in Exodus 16, supernaturally provides manna for them, right? Supernaturally provides manna. There's a whole bunch of stuff surrounding that. But then at the end of that chapter, he tells them, take a portion of it and keep it as a memorial to your future generations, right? So we have in Exodus 15, the Lord giving them a name to remember by. Exodus 16, him saying, take a portion of the supernatural provision so that it is remembered for generations. And then in Exodus 17, they fight against the Amalekites. And this is the fight where Joshua goes forward and they're fighting. And Moses is up above them. And when his hands are extended, they are winning. And when his hands go down, they are not winning. And so his hands are staying up, but he gets tired. And so two people come alongside of him and hold up his hands, right? At the end of that battle, I'm going to flip there. Exodus 14. I'm going to skip all the way down to 14. The whole passage starts in 8, but I'm going to start in verse 14. Then the Lord said to Moses, write this for a memorial in the book and recount it in the hearing of Joshua, that I will utterly blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. And Moses built an altar and called its name, the Lord is my banner. For he said, because the Lord has sworn, the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. So he writes it in a book. He speaks of it to other people. He builds an altar for worship, and he declares a new name for the Lord. The last time I spoke a few weeks ago, I shared a story about how the Lord had revealed himself to me as the God of more rope, right? I'm at the end of my rope, and he is the God of more rope, right? That's my personal name for the Lord, okay? And because I have this name for the Lord that I have memorialized and remembered, I see him manifesting that way in other spots of my life. Because I speak about it. I speak about it in conversation. I shared it in the sermon. And we got lots of feedback. People going, oh, that's such a good name for the Lord. Yes, that's who I need him to be in my life. Right? Encourage and stir up other people's faith. And because in that time and in that season of my life, the Lord gave me a name for him. And because I memorialized it, because I remember it, future transitions have been easier because I know who my Lord is. When you remember what he has done, you have something to stand on when you're in the middle again. Remember what he has done. Memorialize the milestones. And then we're in Exodus 19. The Israelites still have a long way to go on their journey, but we're going to end here. He brings them to Mount Sinai. Exodus 19, verse 1. In the third month after the children of Israel had gone out of the land of Egypt, on the same day they came to the wilderness of Sinai. For they had departed from Rephidim, had come to the wilderness of Sinai, and camped in the wilderness. So Israel camped there before the mountain. And Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings, and brought you to myself. Now, therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. And so that brings us to our last principle. Principle number 8. the journey, the transition season, is because of love. He takes us on the journey. He takes us through the transition because he loves us. And we submit to it because we love him. If we forget that the transition, if we forget that the rough way, that the journey we're on is because of love, our hearts will not be strong enough to endure. It's because of love that he calls us into that place. He loves us and he wants that greater glory for us. So he calls us from glory to glory. He loves us. He has a future and a hope and a glorious and a beautiful destination for each one of you. And because he loves us, he calls us through that shaky ground. He calls us through that rough path. And because we love him, we can place ourselves in his hand. And so eight principles, eight prophetic principles to guide you through transition. That number eight is a fun one because it means new beginnings, right? Seventh day, the Sabbath. And then the next day, the eighth day, Jesus rose. New beginnings. Eight principles to call us to a new place in the Lord. And so I bless you. I bless you to walk well through transition. I bless you to walk well through the rough season we're in the natural, and any spiritual transitions that are before you. Submit yourself to the Lord. He is faithful and he is worthy of your trust. In Jesus' name.
What an excellent word for the season we're in. Tomorrow will be Omer 25, halfway through the transition between Passover and Pentecost. We stopped in Valerie's message tonight at Mount Sinai, the place where the Lord revealed himself, who he is, what he likes, we call it the Ten Commandments, to the people. We're in that transition. Could it be that the Lord allowed Isaiah the prophet to see what Valerie just spoke of when the Israelites were at the Red Sea? That pillar of fire and that cloud were massive because the huge Egyptian army could not see or get around it. In Isaiah 52:12, Isaiah tells us, you're not going to go through this transition as a fugitive, and you won't go out in haste because the Lord will be your rear guard. And the Lord God of Israel is your rear guard. He goes before you. He follows after you. He's carrying you through because of his great love. We're 1/6 of the way through the transition to 5780 in September. Prophetically, this is a season that we're supposed to be on the watch, which means, as Valerie said, that little word too, we're going to go from glory to glory to glory to glory to glory. So we're going to be in an accelerated season of transitions. This is an excellent word. I encourage you to watch it again. I encourage you to listen to it online. If you are traveling someplace and you just want to listen to it, download it, take it with you, and learn these points so that in your heart you are remembering the Lord who goes before you, carries you, and follows after you. I love you all. Have a very blessed week. We decree you are transitioning in excellence and carrying a deposit of glory to put down in the new place the Lord is taking you to. Have a blessed week.